Hi, welcome to another edition of Interviews with the Masters, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com, your number one spot for inside information and quality gear. Today we have on the phone with us a really good friend of mine, man behind one of the better groups, one of the best groups on the on Facebook, and that's John Bingham of Broadhead Brotherhood. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm doing really well.
Good. Well, we're kind of like in the midst of elk season right now, and I know John works for Let It Rip Outfitters, and I know you guys got a bunch of got a few clients out there. So glad you took some time out to help us out and get a podcast in.
No problem. You know, I've been looking forward to this because if you would have asked me 2 or 3 years ago, hey, John, would you be interested in being on a podcast? And my first question would be, can you explain to me exactly what a podcast is? And then after that, I would be like, why me? You know, because I never thought I would be in this position. So I appreciate you taking the time to invite me to talk.
Absolutely. It's funny that you say that because podcasting seems like it's become like this big phenomenon, but it's been around forever. I actually started doing this podcasting. This podcast is very same podcast. I mean, I revamped it and I brought it on a different platform, but we've been doing a podcast on the Hunting Channel. We did it for 7 years or 6 years, and then I stopped it for about 3, and here we are. We brought it back this year to the masses. And I actually got involved. I had been on podcasts like 12 years ago. There used to be a guy who had a podcast called Blogging the Outdoors. And I did one with him. And, you know, it's just been, and it's always like, it's the cool thing to do. So, but anyway, here we are.
I think it's badass because, you know, if you travel for work like I do, you know, you find yourself sitting in an airport or, you know, there's long spans of time to, you know, between what you're actually doing for your real job. And, you know, I started listening to your podcasts and some of the other ones for, you know, for TV shows and such on the plane. And now I'm practically fascinated with them. I don't even listen to my music hardly anymore. You know, it's just when I'm driving into work, I'll listen to some podcast. I think that's more fascinating than it is, you know, music. So
I'm the same way. I spend a lot of my days when I'm not hunting. Well, I spend a lot of days on the road hunting too, but when I'm home, I'm on the road a lot too, because I'm, you know, in construction. So I'm constantly in the truck and I'm constantly driving around. So I'm always listening to podcasts. You know, some of my favorites are Jay Scott, and I like the Meat Eater podcast, and Gritty Bowman's pretty good. There's a couple other ones out there that I enjoy that don't sound like broken records. But, anyway, so here we are.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
All right. Even if I were to go to a job interview, this is the part that I struggle the most with because I have a hard time talking about myself. You know, I've been an outdoorsman just like probably anybody who's listening to this podcast for a really long time. I think I first sat in a box blind with my father when I was about 7 or 8 years old. And ever since then, I've always been one of those guys that you just can't, I can't imagine myself not being in the field somewhere in some capacity, even if it's just for a hike around the hills. That's, you know, I think that's where a lot of our blood is tied into. And I can't imagine my life without the outdoors as a part of it in some shape, form, or fashion.
Yeah, I mean, so, most of the guys that I feel like are as passionate as we are have kind of been in it for a long time. That's not the rule of thumb. I mean, that's a rule of thumb. That's not the, there's plenty of exceptions out there. I know guys that just took it up a few years ago that are just super gung-ho and super passionate about it and so on and so forth. But I feel like the guys that have been in it since they were kids have really become part of their lives.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's, and I'm sure you can relate, and a lot of the listeners can relate that, you know, it's, you've just been doing it for so long that it's just a part of who you are. And, it's a part of your everyday life, just like, I don't know, brushing your teeth or taking a shower. You know, it's just something that we love. And my only regret is I don't get to do it nearly as much as I would like to. For a guy who runs a Facebook page that has a lot of followers, I don't think I spend more than, X amount of days in the field when it really should be double or triple that. But I'll take what I can get. I'm pretty happy with any chance that I can get out there. So, we chased bulls around last weekend, and even though it was about a 48-hour time period, I was just relaxed in my element. Felt like that's where I needed to be, and it was a very much appreciated break from everyday life.
Awesome, right? That's part of it, man. It's part of that getting unplugged and getting away. Even though nowadays, are we really unplugged? We're always, I feel like I always got my cell phone with me. People always ask me, how do you get service out in the backcountry and this and that? And I'm like, yeah, I've done all these things to improve my boosters and all that stuff.
No, dude, it's like an oxygen tank, and you're on the moon. You just can't be without it. I'm sorry, I'm just not one of those guys who can put my phone down and walk away from it, because
I know
I'm going to miss something. Even if I'm not going to miss something, I think I'm going to miss it. So.
Yeah, I can't believe I've become that way, actually, because I used to be so anti. Like, when smartphones first really started coming out, my wife used to make fun of me, and I was like, because I liked my old Nokia phone. I'm like, as long as I could text message and get phone calls, who the frick needs all this other, I'm like, I don't need all this other crap. And now I'm like the guy that, like, just out of habit picks up his phone to look and see if there's something going on. Like, if I got a text message or whatever. It's just, like, constantly. It's, like, glued to me. I hate it. I hate it and I love it at the same time.
That's exactly right. It's a love-hate relationship. You know, there's something about having the power of knowledge at your fingertips at all times. And, it's I don't want to call it a crutch, but, it's like having a second brain on you the whole time. And sometimes I hate it, yeah. And then sometimes, there's long periods of time when you're out there glassing and not seeing anything, or you're sitting in a blind. Sure is handy to have for entertainment.
Oh, yeah. I spent many hours in a tree stand there in a blind messing around with my phone. Not paying attention to the deer walking by. But
hey, you know you have a problem when you go and you buy a solar charger just so that you can use your phone while you're sitting in the stand.
Yep.
So that you don't run out of battery life and then suddenly find yourself actually having to be bored.
Oh, yeah. I know. I say I bought my Goal Zero Nomad for my, to charge up my GPS and my flashlight and all that stuff, but it probably gets about 6 charges to my phone and 1 charge to that stuff for use. So
I get it.
So. Anyway, so tell us. So John runs the Broadhead Brotherhood. A lot of people that listen to this know what that is, because a lot of my followers are part of that group. But there's a lot of guys that don't know Broadhead Brotherhood. Is a group on Facebook, and it is exactly what it sounds. It's a brotherhood of guys and ladies that love the outdoors and archery and rifle hunting too. Talk to me a little bit about the Broadhead Brotherhood and what your goals were, what your vision was, and why you started it.
You know, Here's the other part I struggle with. You know, whenever somebody asks me, you know, well, what was your mission when you started this, and what was your vision? And it's pretty simple. I didn't have anything planned. I never would have thought that I would be, you know, it would be this big. When I first started it, you know, I've been an archery hunter for a really long time, and being from Texas and moving out here, you know, 13, 14 years ago out to Arizona, when you're from, you know, that part of the country, you know, rifle hunting is pretty predominant because, you know, the seasons aren't broken up like they are out west, you know, into these little 7 and 10 day increments, and there's really no draw. You have months on end to go shoot, and that's kind of how I was raised. You know, if you couldn't shoot a rifle, then they were probably going to adopt you out. So, but when I moved out here and started learning about the draw system, so on and so forth, I recognize that archery hunting out west is the key to giving yourself more time in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And just like anybody else, I did a lot of Google search. You know, I did a lot of reaching out to people that I knew. I did a lot of searching on forums, looking for information on how to get started bow hunting out here. And then once I got kind of clicked in, that's right around the time that I started getting kind of active on Facebook, not really so much hunting, but, you know, keeping in touch with family and so on. And then I started following other pages and groups, and I thought, you know what, it would be kind of cool to get some people together and where we can talk about it, and we can be respectful with one another. We can help out new guys. We can, you know, help out veterans, whatever we could do. So I actually started with a different group on Facebook called Arizona Bow Hunters.
Right.
And once I started that group, I started looking at other Facebook pages, and then I started realizing just how big archery hunting out west really, really is.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know what? What would be even cooler is if I started a page or a group that included all these guys from outside of Arizona. So I kind of had the idea brewing in my head for quite a while, and talking with some friends, and you know, we were just like, yeah, you know, that would be kind of neat. And the first thing I had to do was come up with a name, and I actually saw a window sticker on another guy's truck that was for a football team, and it was, if I remember correctly, it was, you know, like his jersey number, and then it said Arrowwood or Arrowhood family, and the name just, you know, popped in my name. Oh, Broadhead Brotherhood, that sounds pretty good. And I was so excited about it that I took the next exit, and while I was at the stoplight, I jotted it down on a note. So I just started it. I, you know, went into Facebook. They make it easy to create groups or pages, and I just,
oh yeah,
just went to the create a group page, literally with no plan, with no idea of where it was going to go or what it was going to do. I just had just some simple ideas in mind. Was one was get like-minded people all together. Number two, that it's a respectful place where the drama is at a minimum.
Which is tough to do online.
Yeah, very. and then number three was going to be, it was going to be a good resource place for people to come in and ask the simplest of questions or the most difficult thought-provoking questions and get other people's thoughts about, you know, what, you know, I mean, I know we all hate this question, but what broadhead do you guys think is best? Or,
right,
you know, what arrows are you guys using? Or all those things. And you know, because you put that all out on the Hunting Channel online. And, mm-hmm, you know, so that's kind of the place that I wanted. It was more like, you know, kind of like
community.
A nice bar. Yeah, it's kind of like a nice bar where we all go and we have a beer or, you know, whatever, you know, suits your fancy. So I started that. I picked out randomly just 35 friends off my friends list and just added them. I didn't even tell them I was adding them. And then it took off from there. I just, one day we're at 100 people and then we're at 500 people. And I thought that was the biggest deal. I just was like, whoa, you know, so I went out and I bought a dozen arrows and said, hey, we're going to celebrate 500 people. You know, I'm going to give away these dozen arrows. And, so it just took off from there. I can't even explain how it did that or why it did that, but it was just, I don't know. It was just, we just took off and now here I am.
There you go. Now you're internet famous. Oh man. Go ahead. I'm going to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, it's a lot of fun. I mean, you have a huge online presence, you know, on YouTube and the Outdoor Insiders, which I'm happy to be a part of as well. And there's so many different people out there with so many different opinions.
Yeah.
That, you know, and one day you're super happy to be doing it, and then the second day you're like, oh my God, what have I done? You know, here's this little red delete button. It would be that easy. But no, I'm just rambling. So
I've been there a few times myself, man. There's a lot of times where I want to throw my hands up and just walk away from it all and just say, you know, screw it. Why am I doing this? I mean, I know why I hunt. I know why I film my hunts, because I'm just as passionate about that part of it as I am about the hunting. Maybe slightly less, but why the self-promotion? Why dealing with the Facebook? Why deal with the criticism? Why deal with all the other crap that I put myself through? And there's a lot of times I just want to just walk away and throw my hands up, and then somebody will send me a message and say, hey, I want to thank you. You know, this helped me out, or you inspire me, or, you know, and then I'm like, now I remember why I do it. Now I remember why I stayed involved in Facebook.
Yeah, that is exactly there's a huge amount of gratification that, you know, when I'm checking in on my Facebook for the, you know, 132nd time of the day, mm-hmm. and, you know, there may be one post that's a little bit controversial and unfortunately everybody pays attention to that one. And you know, they all, it's just, for whatever reason, it's just human nature it's easier to be negative and criticize than it is to praise. But then you can scroll down a little bit, and there will be, just for a recent example, there's somebody's daughter on her very first dove hunt,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, and she's just, you see the look on her face, she's beaming. You know, she's there with her very first dove, and then you kind of think, you know, that was me, you know, 22 years ago or something like that, you know, and that makes it worth it, you know. Or when you see a guy that posts that, hey, I broke a tie rod, I'm up in 22 north, I'm stuck.
Yeah.
Can somebody come? Is there anybody available to come help me? And there's people who will drop what they're doing at their house with their families or whatever and go and help that guy.
I know. I think that's one of the coolest things about that. I've noticed that a lot. And some guys came and helped out my cousin try to find his bull. Unfortunately, they didn't. This was a few years back. But it's just that kind of stuff, just like it makes me feel like there's still something that we're all fighting for in this world, you know?
Yeah.
Not everybody's gone to shit. And I really like one of the things about the community of that, of our group, of your group, you know, that makes it, it makes it all worth it, I guess, you know?
Well, yeah. And you said something just now of, you know, you said our group, and then you corrected it to my group, but you're right in the first statement. It's our group. You know, I didn't build any of this. I laid the foundation.
Right.
And with some simple ideas and a lot of other good people, active people just kind of took off with it. And, you know, I'm pretty proud of that. And you know, if without those kinds of people, without the people who reach out and help without hesitation, who share their information, who even share their spots about their, you know, the units that they hunt in,
mm-hmm.
which is very difficult for some people to do. That's what builds this thing, and that's what keeps it going. And
oh, yeah.
So at some point it just keeps growing from there.
Absolutely. Which is that kind of a double-edged sword, because you notice the bigger the group gets, the less you see of the helping each other out, I think. And mainly because of a Facebook thing. It has nothing to do with the people itself. I think every time I notice, like, you reach past a certain amount of people because there's so many people posting things, and most of us are very egocentric when it comes to Facebook. I am definitely very egocentric, you know, meaning I post something and I don't spend a whole lot of time going through my feed, because my feed is just, I mean, when you have, this is going to sound conceited, but when you have 5,000 friends or whatever, the feed is just constantly, and everybody adds me to their group. And so I'm just constantly, the notifications coming like crazy, and it's hard to decipher what's what. But it gets to the point that a lot of the good stuff gets missed, because there's so many things, like, so many people are trying to see, have their stuff seen, you know? But
I wish
Facebook would figure out a better algorithm that wasn't so geared to them making money. You know, that other.
Well,
I mean, that's,
you know,
what it is. It's just, but
yeah. Well, I mean, you got to respect the idea that they had,
but
they have billions of dollars that we don't have. So,
of course. Well, that's all the more reason to get stop being so damn greedy,
yeah,
and let people's stuff be seen.
but here's the thing. You and I talked about this probably a year or so ago, and you were the one who said, you know, everybody wants their 2 minutes,
oh,
or
yeah,
15 minutes. What was it you said? Everybody wants their, you know, they want to see their words printed online, and I get that. You know, people want to be seen and noticed, whether it's for a long term or just say, hey, I have this opinion here. And you're right, it gets so busy on Facebook. There's some posts that I don't see for 2 or 3 days that don't show up on the Broadhead Brotherhood page. They show up on my personal feed, you know,
yep.
And I'm surprised. And I look at the date on it, I was like, oh, wow, he killed this nice bull 2 days ago. And I feel bad, because I try to make it a point that everybody who posts their kill on there, I always try to say nice or congratulations, or I try to say something to let them know that I appreciate their hunt and I appreciate them posting there. And there's some that just get away. So, I mean, it's Facebook, so kind of learn to accept it and just take it as it is. If I could watch it from three different computer screens, I probably would, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. No, you know, I've actually, like, missed, like, family, you know, birthdays and stuff like that, you know, stuff that I don't know, you know, off the top of my head exactly, my cousin in New York or something like that's birthday, and you know Facebook will remind you it's people's birthdays. I kind of got in the habit of that being my crutch, but it'll show you the top people that you interact with. So because most of my interactions are with hunting and hunting people, you know, my poor cousin Michelle you know, it's four lines down, and I didn't see that it was her birthday. You know, just it's kind of crazy. I don't know. You know, I got to figure out how to use Facebook a lot better, or I don't know. Something's gonna get a little bit. Anyway,
yeah.
Before we go off on a tangent, I start getting on the bandwagon that I don't want to, or a horse that I don't want to get off of. One of the really good things that came out of Broadhead Brotherhood is the Shoot for Hope. Why don't you talk to us about that?
It's one of my favorite things because it's such a contradiction for me because I don't shoot 3D. I don't go to tournaments. I don't go to any of that. I don't even own a 3D target.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know this sounds really weird on, you know, I put on this big 3D shoot, but so the whole backstory is my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer 4 years ago. It's all such a blur since then. Anyways, you know, the hospital that she was getting treated at, there were some really good people, and, you know, I credit them with saving her life. And so we sat down and we've always been thinking about starting a foundation or something, but we never thought that it would be in this genre, if you will. So once all the treatment was done and everything's clear, she's good to go now, everything's fine, we wanted to do something to say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, we're an archery hunting family, let's put on a shoot. Let's do a 3D shoot. And maybe we can get, 20 or 30 people to come out and we'll try to raise $4,000 or $5,000. And so that was our plan. Again, just like when I built Broadhead Brotherhood, there was really no plan. There was just an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So I approached the hospital, talked to a guy over there named Corey Cooper, who's actually a pretty good friend now. And he, at the time, he ran an organization within the hospital there called the HOPE Team. And the HOPE is an acronym. And what they do is provide support services for the cancer patients there. So we got directed to that company or to that service because the hospital itself, they cannot take, they're not a 501(c), they're a for-profit. So, but the HOPE Team is, and they operate solely off of the generosity of donors. So, anyways, we started this idea, Corey and I and my wife and a team of other good people. We sat down and said, hey, all right, let's do this. And I still had this thing in mind that I was going to raise $5,000. So we started planning it about 8 months. Our target date was April. Again, the April date, there was no intent behind that. It was just an idea. We didn't think that, we wanted to do it in December, but then we were like, well, people are going to have to choose between hunting and going to a 3D shoot. So somehow by default, we ended up in mid-April.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't really know, Corey, he's never been a hunter or an archery hunter. He is now, but, his experience was golf tournaments. So we set up all the sponsorship levels and everything just like a golf tournament. And we just put it out there and said, hey, if you want to be a sponsor of this shoot, come on out. And it just happened, and within a couple of days of us announcing this, my good friend, Brandon Goodwin, who lives out in Illinois,
mm-hmm.
he said, I want to be your title sponsor. And, I'll write you a check right now. And that's exactly how it started. So we built a Facebook page.
Ryan's
we started
a good boy.
Promoting it.
He's a good man.
He is a very good man. He's probably one of the most – I know a lot of generous people. He's probably at the top of the generosity list. Super good guy, super great hunter, and he's just generous to a fault. And And he, I've let him know several times how much we appreciate him. So anyways, you know, our first shoot went off. You know, we had a few hiccups, but we expected those 30 people that I expected to show up the day before the shoot. We already had online registrations just beyond 100 people. So I said, yeah, no, this is going to be a pretty busy day. By the end of the day, on our first shoot, we had 270 shooters, and over 350 people came out just to see what was it about, and you know, to you know, participate in the raffle. We had so many, again, generous people who were from guys who were, you know, would make a custom pocket knife to outfitters who are giving away 5-day hunts, mule deer hunts in Utah. So yep. It just exploded right in my face in a good way. And we ended up raising, I think gross, we did $36,000. And we netted 31 after all the bills were paid.
That's awesome.
So, you know, now that we had that, now we're kind of stuck I shouldn't say stuck, but now we had to make the decision, do we do it again? Because it did turn out pretty big. So now it's just part of what we do. We're, you know, we did it last year, and you set up the smoker course, and you're certainly invited back to the next one to do it again next year.
Absolutely.
And, last year we raised even more. We went from 31,000 to 38,000, and I'm pretty sure we're on track for this one to go over 50 next April. We're already
awesome.
We're already meeting every month. We started meeting 3 or 4 months ago to plan it and get it all laid out. And that's what
awesome.
We do. So yeah, it's awesome. It's fun. It's a ton of work, but man, and I just can't say enough about you know, the volunteers that came out there. People who just gave up their own time to come out and help us. There's a string of guys that, you know, I just can't say thank you enough to them, yourself included. You've been to the last two.
I didn't do anything, man. Those guys that out there setting up targets and, you know, dealing with all that and standing in the hot sun all day. I came. I shot. I did the smoker course. But, no thanks to me to
well,
do,
you're,
I didn't do much.
Yeah. Well, we've got plans for you next year, so for your smoker course. So when you show up, you're going to be a lot busier than you were last year. So.
Oh,
guaranteed. So, it's going to be a busy day for you.
Good, good. I actually have another idea for you, but I'll shoot that up to you before. But after we get off the phone here, I don't want to do it on the podcast because you might say that's a crap idea, and I don't want anybody to know. So.
Okay.
But anyway, well, so if you're listening into this podcast, obviously. Definitely something you should get involved in. It's a super fun shoot. What do we have? 36 targets? Was it 36?
We're last year we did.
Or 40. Two courses of 40.
Yeah.
20?
No, we did. I did 3 courses of 15.
Oh, three. That's it. 3 courses of 15. That's what it was. I only got.
So we had
one and a half courses. It's,
yeah, we're Game and Fish has been really generous to us as well. You know, they own the ground out there that we put it on,
mm-hmm.
and they've been super helpful. They pretty much give us the run of the place, and they are they're a first class operation out there too.
Yep.
So the next one's going to be, we have it scheduled for April 16th next year, day after tax day. It's going to be
cool.
In the same location. We might, we're probably going to add a competitive course to that.
Nice.
And Abel from Full Draw Bow Hunters, he's the guy who lets us use all of his targets. And if you've ever been to his Mormon Lake shoot, it's a big day, it's a big deal on Father's Day weekend. He runs some really good shoots,
mm-hmm.
not only up there, but, you know, down here on the weekends at Ben Avery Archery Range. So he's a super good guy, and he agreed to run a competitive. It was actually his idea. So hopefully, I haven't talked to him recently, but hopefully he's still on board. So all you guys who are competitive 3D shooters want to come out and win some money, we're going to have that available also.
Awesome. Hey, where can guys find out about the Shoot Pro website?
The best place is just, we have a Facebook page called Broadhead Brotherhood Shoot for Hope. You can just go give us a like, and we'll start updating that here pretty quick. And also, they can join my group on Facebook, Broadhead Brotherhood, and we cross-promote between that group and that page. So there's no lack of information. Once we get to a certain point here, usually about February, we'll start promoting it pretty heavily.
Nice.
And, you know, while I have this venue, if anybody out there is interested in being a sponsor or donating some outdoor gear or anything, you know, if you're a business owner and you want to have a little bit of promotion and you have, you know, some gift cards or whatever, we won't say no to anything. However, we do need to have everything in hand by April 1st because mm-hmm. we get so much in. We have to organize that before the shoot. So, but we're always looking for good sponsors. We're always looking for good donors too.
Good deal. Yeah, we'll have to twist Craig's arm of the Outdoor Insiders. Maybe Grip Scout's a couple of gift cards or something.
Yeah, actually, Zach got us some gift cards for last year. Yeah, Zach Knowles. So,
oh, good deal.
Yeah, he hooked us up.
I didn't know that. That's awesome. All right, well, so this is this podcast is called Interviews with the Master, so I got to ask you at least one question related to hunting. And since you're a guide and you see a lot of out-of-state hunters, you know, guys who haven't, you know, come from the Midwest or East Coast or, you know, and they've never really experienced what it is to hunt out west, what do you think are the three most important things that a guy coming to hunt, let's say, archer and mule deer in January with you, what do you think are the three most important things that they have to incorporate in their skill set or get used to doing or, you know, they should be armed with, basically?
I think the first thing they need to be armed with is some good optics. I learned that lesson firsthand, you know, coming out, being a Texas guy who was accustomed to sitting in a blind on a fence line or something like that, waiting for something to come to me. Yeah. Out here, since we have so much public land and millions of acres, and you want to maximize your chances or your time, you got to sit down behind some good optics. And, you know, I know it gets expensive, so just get out. I would say just bring the best that you can afford and a tripod, mm-hmm. you know, some kind of, or a stabilizer platform of some sort, and be prepared to spend time behind the glass.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be the first thing. That's the first thing we try to tell them is, you know, hey, if you got good optics, bring them. You know, if you can't afford them because you've been saving up to come on this hunt, that's fine. We have plenty to do it with, but if you have some good binoculars and a good tripod, bring them and be prepared to use them. Secondly, you know, I know there's a lot of Facebook pages and Facebook celebrities who are into the fitness kind of deal, and I would say that if you're going to come from I keep referring back to Texas because that's where I'm from. If you're going to come from the flatlands of South Texas out here, be prepared to hunt at elevation and be prepared to go uphill everywhere you go. Because, you know, even when I teach, you know, little seminars here and there, I like to say everything in Arizona is uphill. It just,
yep.
it seems like you're always climbing some damn thing out there. So, you know, you got to be in relatively good condition, or, you know, you really put yourself in a position to where if you're not really physically able to put a couple, at least a couple miles under your belt a day, you're really not going to enjoy the experience. You just aren't. You know, rifle hunting, maybe it's a little different, but if you're archery hunting...
I don't know. You're rifle hunting, though, you know? But
yeah, I mean, yeah, we've
you
got...
You can put some miles on your boots, and, you know, especially when you're using really good optics. You spot stuff from really long distances, you know? I've about killed my father-in-law a few times on a rifle hunt, just hiking him up the hill, you know?
I don't disagree with that at all. I would say that, you know, if... Yeah, I mean, I guess my point is when we have guys show up in camp, we kind of have to evaluate their condition we have to quiz them and a little bit, you know, how are you with hiking, and, you know, if we see that they've showed up with brand new boots and things like that, these are all things that we have to take into account. So I would say if you're going to come out, just to kind of recap these last two: one, the best optics that you can afford with a platform to steady them on, to be in relatively good condition. And I would say number three is, God, there's so many.
I just thought of Ken sitting here listening to you.
maybe shooting outside of your comfort zone. If you're accustomed to sitting in a tree stand, or in a blind and shooting from that one position, you should accustom yourself to shooting uphill, downhill, across a draw, with obstacles between you and the animal. You should practice all those kinds of scenarios. And you have a ton of YouTube videos about that, so I would say, hey, go subscribe to Stallone's YouTube and follow him, because yeah, no problem. I mean, you deserve it, because you put a lot of work into that and you got a lot of good information out there. So
thank you.
So yeah, that's my top three things: optics, physical condition, and shooting ability.
Yeah, definitely try to learn how to stretch out that shot too. You know, if you're comfortable shooting 30, 40 yards, got to get comfortable out to 60 and 70.
No doubt. That's really hard for a lot of guys.
Especially here in Arizona.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. If you're gonna put the January mule deer rut example out there, then those longer shots are definitely a benefit to you, because just like when you're hunting elk during the rut, they're surrounded by cows. There's a lot of eyes looking, and you can't always make that move into 25 and 30 yards. I mean, it can be done, but a lot of times there may be a dozen pairs of eyes, and their only job is to look for you.
Yep.
So sometimes you 60, 70 yards is what it's going to take to kill that big buck.
You know, I'm going to add something. We touched on rifle for a second there. If you're going to come and do a rifle hunt, especially for coos deer, you got to practice target acquisition. I can't tell you how many times I've taken guys out, new hunters who've never hunted coos deer. You find them in the binoculars. You move them into a comfortable distance, 300, whatever yards, and they can't find them in the scope. I feel like that's like one of the biggest frustrations. I know I'm friends with plenty of guides here in Arizona, but they all have the same thing. Like, guys can't find the animal in the scope. And that might be, you know, you going out and setting up targets or having somebody set up the targets for you while you're not looking, and, you know, and make them so that they're not, you know, they're brown or something, you know, not that they stand out. So you can practice, you know, target acquisition in the scope and stuff. I know that's a lot of guys that I don't want to use the word guided because I don't guide professionally here. I take guys out a lot, friends and, you know, family and stuff like that, or people who win my hunt giveaways and stuff like that. And it seems to be the thing that I've encountered the most and what I've heard from other outfitters and guides in the state, that guys come and you show them a deer and they get behind the gun and they're like, well, I can't find it. And then the opportunity walks away, and, you know.
No, so. You're absolutely right. We've had that experience more than once. And, yeah. You know, but you're right. You know, if I had to pick a fourth option, if you're going to come out for a rifle hunt, practice that. Because when you can't find that animal in your scope, you start to get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Then you start kind of making a little bit of, you know, mistakes about, you know, basic scanning and the acquisition. And then you're in a position of the guy next to you saying, okay, do you see that cactus with the funny looking rock next to it? Well, yeah, I think so. And then you're talking about a different cactus, and then mm-hmm. then it's just all mm-hmm. screwed. Then it's just all screwed up. But yeah, that's easy to practice. I would encourage anybody that's coming out for a rifle hunt to practice that.
Absolutely. I think I'm going to put together a video on how to practice that and how to quickly acquire targets on a ridge or whatever. I've helped a few guys try to adapt my, what's the word I'm looking for? My system of how I do it. And because I struggled with that too when I first moved out here. I remember going my first coos deer hunt like 17 years ago, and I could not for the life of me. And they were close. They were probably 200 yards or less, and I was still having a hard time. And I got frustrated and flustered, and I finally got him in the scope. I blew the shot. So I'm definitely going to try to put something together. Anyway, we already talked about where listeners could find out about you and, you know, and Broadhead Brotherhood and the Broadhead Brotherhood Shoot for Hope. You have any other words of wisdom or anything you want to pass along to?
Words of wisdom for me is like an oxymoron. I'll tell people what I know, and sometimes it's not always right. But, you know, I got to say that the Arizona elk season is getting off to gangbusters. I've seen a lot of good bulls drop out there. So super happy for those people, you know, even though I'm not out there, I'm here talking to you on the phone in my office.
Yeah.
So,
I'm supposed to be in Montana right now, man, so I feel you. I'm supposed to be chasing elk. I had to cancel that trip. Good old work got in the way. So.
Oh, damn. but, yeah, no, I just no, I don't have any words of wisdom. I'm just super thankful for all the people that you know, have joined us on Facebook especially thankful for the people who can contribute stuff of value. You know, there's some guys that have been there, you know, since the very beginning, and I appreciate those guys, and you know, I'm just really thankful for what people have been able to help me build this thing on, and it's opened up some opportunities, and excited about that. And I mean, look, I'm on a podcast all of a sudden, so you know,
yeah.
No, I'll close it with, you know, I wish everybody good luck for the rest of the season, no matter where you're at. And I know that Midwest, archery deer is coming up. If it's not already opened, I think some of my friends are first weekend in October. So those are coming up quick. So it's going to get exciting on Broadhead Brotherhood with more pictures of kills. And so if you're not a follower on our Facebook page. Come look us up and click that join button. We'll be happy to have you.
Absolutely. Recruit some friends. So, well, I'd like to thank everybody at Broadhead Brotherhood, too, for their ongoing support over the years. Makes my job more enriched, I guess, when I get the support from my fellow Broadhead Brotherhood folk. And, yeah, well, John, thanks for coming on, and I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
And, all right, John, I sure appreciate the time that you've given me. And, you know, if we can ever help you out, you know where to find me.
Absolutely. All right, man. Have a good one.
All right, buddy. Thank you.